Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. We're going to be delving into the murky world of international trade and its effect on domestic commodities a bit later in the show with Farmtario editor John Gregg. Technology writer Spencer Myers will tell us about the rise of autonomous equipment on the farm, and Market Farm's Phil Franz Workington will keep us abreast of the latest developments in commodities. But first, we're going to be looking at a topic that's got a lot of Western beef producers on edge this year, short feed supplies. It's a pan-prairie problem, with all the provinces affected to some extent. Among the hardest hit areas are Manitoba's cattle-producing regions, where there's been two consecutive drought years and the hurt is really starting to be felt. Those producers are in the midst of making some tough decisions on their operations that will have ramifications for years to come. We're joined now, by telephone, by Manitoba Beef Producers General Manager Carson Callum. Carson, thanks for joining us. I wish it was under better circumstances.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me about the situation.
So, how bad is the situation and how widespread is it?
You know, it's quite extreme in quite a few places across the province, especially in that Inner Lake and in northwest side of the province, where they really haven't had much accumulated precipitation through this growing year. So it's really compounded too when we think we had a very bad drought conditions in a lot of those areas last summer as well. So feed shortage is already a problem moving into this year, and then now with the lack of precipitation in a lot of areas across the province, it's really made things quite a bit worse. And then you have some other situations that's hurting the forage supply, such as grasshoppers, which there seems to be quite a few of those popping up.
So what's this going to mean to cattle producers? What are the kind of tough decisions they're making right now?
You know, this lack of feed in the back-to-back drought year, it's really going to lead to some tough decisions. They're going to have to either source feed at a high price tag, and a lot of the time that won't pencil out. So if that's the case, they might need, and if they don't have enough feed source to last over the winter, they're really going to have to decrease their herd size.
So what's kind of management strategies are they pursuing? I saw that you and the Keystone Agricultural Producers put out a press release basically telling farmers if they have any kind of feed sources, hay sources, straw even, to let people know that they have it. Are there those kind of efforts being made to sort of switch over to different rations and to try and fill the gap somehow?
Yeah, exactly. We're trying to fill the gap in some of those spots where they really just don't have much forage or feed supply to get over the winter months. So some of those alternative management strategies could be, you know, accessing some hail damaged crop from a grain producer that has already got a claim in and is able to just be cut as green feed. It's maybe dropping straw from the combine if their particular technology on their combine allows for it, for some of that straw to be baled. Or it also could be allowing maybe your neighbor to come in and graze some stubble or cover crops this fall, just to kind of extend that grazing time for these animals and allow producers to not have to feed stocked forage as long over the winter. And then looking at other potential byproducts, you know, I think last year during the first year of this drought challenges, there a lot of producers looked to some byproducts in the potato industry and maybe feeding a bit more canola meal. And it's really going to be a creative solution for a lot of producers just to see how they can feed their animals, and as long as they're balancing their rations properly to the, you know, the nutrient requirements of the herd over the winter months, it should work. And I mean, having this release come out from CAP and ourselves here at MBP, it's really trying to increase that communication between these grain farmers and cattle farmers to try to help each other out in this tough time.
So my question, I guess, and for everybody, is how hard will this hit economically? Like, we've heard reports that there's already cattle on feed, which is earlier than I've ever heard of it. How bad is this going to be?
So in those areas, it's going to be very hard for some producers. These feed prices seem to be just going up and up, and that's just basically comes down to supply and demand. With this back year, forage supply is low, so there's a lot of people looking for feed, and it's just increasing that price. So it could really hit them economically. And if they don't have the resources to match their herd size, they will have to look at other options, and that could be sending a percentage of their breeding herd to market, because really animal care is top priority for these producers. So we want to make sure that they have the resources to provide over the winter months. And if they don't, then they need to look at other options.
Now, you had mentioned earlier that this is the second year of drought for some of these producers. What have been the effects of that? I can't help but think that that must have a long-term impact on the quality of their pasture.
Yeah, no. So if it's just not getting the precipitation, that forage is not going to be able to grow properly. And there is a lot of management strategies that producers are implementing over the summer months to try to maintain that stand and that. For example, that they could be rotating their pasture to, not as have many animals on a certain paddock to allow that forage to bounce back. But if it's just not getting the precipitation in 2 years in a row, it's not gonna come back. So they're already short of feed moving into this summer, and without enough rain over this year for that forage to grow, they're basically not gonna have any stockpile of feed for the winter. So it's really, to answer your question, the back-to-back has really affected that feed supply.
So what about then the market for cattle and the impact this is going to have, for example, on the fall calf run? I wonder if we're not getting to the point where some people are either planning to cull most of their herd or even get out of the business entirely. Are you getting any sense that there are those kind of tough decisions being made?
I think from some of the reports I have heard so far, we could probably assume that the fall calf run will move up, or it'll be more heavier than usual at the market. I think in this stage, it might be a bit too early to say that for sure, but from the reports that we've definitely heard, with people having that really tough time sourcing feed to get their animals through the winter, we definitely could see some more animals coming into the market.
And what about, I guess I'm kind of looking for something positive to end on here. Is there a silver lining to be found anywhere in this situation?
It's a really unfortunate year and really, really tough year for a lot of producers. But when I think about that question, I think that maybe the one silver lining here is us trying to increase the relationships between grain and cattle producers, because that communication in some parts of the province maybe hasn't been that strong in the past, and I'm hoping with a lot of a lot of producers in this dire need that they go out, get out and talk to their neighbor and try to build that relationship to really help each other out, and hopefully this leads to a strong relationship that just won't help out the cattle producers, but maybe in a year where grain producers need some assistance, there can be that communication, and that's probably the silver lining that I would see coming out of this, even though it is a really tough year.
Well, thanks for filling us in on that, Carson. Hopefully producers will get through the winter, and next spring we'll be talking to you about the rains that you've gotten and how pastures are recovering.
Yeah, that would be a welcome discussion.
That was Carson Callum, Manitoba Beef Producers General Manager, filling us in on how Manitoba's livestock sector is coping with an ongoing drought. You're listening to Between the Rows, and I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. A bit later in the show, we'll be talking to technology writer Spencer Myers about the first farmers who are taking autonomous equipment into prairie fields. And Market Farm's Phil Franz Workington will fill us in on the markets. But first, we're joined by Farmtario editor John Gregg, who's here to tell us about a recently announced compensation package for Canada's dairy producers. John, thanks for joining us.
No problem, Gord.
So exactly what was announced and why?
So the Federal Minister of Agriculture, Marie-Claude Bibeault, announced that there would be $1.75 billion over 8 years that would go to dairy farmers, mostly because of the increasing access to the Canadian dairy market given to Europe in the CETA trade agreement, and then to other countries around the Pacific as part of the CPTPP trade agreement. Altogether, it depends on how you do the calculation, and there's some debate over this. It's kind of 5 to 8% of the dairy market has been given away, or that is will now be open for those other countries to fill coming into Canada. It remains to be seen whether that will be filled But certainly the European companies have been eagerly looking to fill that market, especially with cheese.
So I know it's a substantial amount of cash. Do we have a dollar figure? And is that amount warranted?
So the total is $1.75 billion over 8 years. And the announcement on recently was that soon, basically before the October election, there will be a payment of $345 million to the dairy farmers, which will basically just be a direct payment to the dairy farmers. The example that the Ag Ministry gave is that if you milk 80 cows, you'll get about $28,000. So, and you can, if you milk more cows, you get more. You milk fewer cows, you get less. That's essentially, I expect that number roughly equates to the cost for a kilogram of daily butterfat quota. You know, the quota is a little bit more than that in British Columbia. It's a little less than that in Ontario and Quebec, but I'm guessing that's probably where they got that number. And is it warranted? It depends on why you decided to give it out. If you look at the value of the market, you know, there will be a, you know, the loss to Canadian dairy farmers over, you know, years from these two trade deals will certainly be in the billions of dollars. You know, we don't know what the market will do over the next 8 years. You know, putting a program over 8 years, who knows where that will work. And, you know, is that money that we should spend when we're running deficits? There's a lot of questions about this, but it's money that's been long promised. You know, Prime Minister Harper promised a program of roughly that size when he was before the last election in 2015. So that, you know, that this kind of money has been kind of on the table for 4 years. So it's not a real surprise that it's coming. It's just a bit of a challenge optics wise at this point for the dairy industry, because they've always proudly been able to say that they haven't been subsidized. Unlike other places like Europe or the U.S., now it would be a bit more difficult for them to make that case. And you know, we currently have other sectors that are being hit by the wild trade factors that are going on right now, such as the grain and oilseed sector, the hog sector, or the beef sector, that I think could make the argument that, you know, they might be in more need of immediate assistance right now. But you know, keep in mind, this is a long-term program that's been talked about for 4 or 5 years.
Does it set a precedent for other supply-managed commodities that they can expect the same sort of treatment if they were to undergo the same sort of losses?
So I think so, but the trick is with so you have to keep in mind this doesn't actually cover the new trade agreement with the United States and Mexico as well, but the other supply management managed commodities weren't as hard hit in these trade agreements as the dairy sector, and so I think the dairy sector will. And that's why the big money and the big number figure is there for the dairy sector. But yeah, I think that you would certainly give them some leeway to make arguments on compensation, and we just don't hear as much from them compared to the dairy sector.
And speaking of the dairy sector, what was the reaction from the dairy industry to this announcement?
So I think they were fairly muted in it. They certainly thanked the government and said they appreciated it, but certainly made the point that they believed it was justified based on the amount of market share that they're losing. Canada now will be one of the biggest importers of milk in the world if that all that extra market access is filled. You know, we'll be importing significantly more milk than they do in the United States and in Europe based on a per capita basis. I also saw a point made that, you know, that we've lost some of control of our own market and our ability to determine what we do in our market, and that there should be some, you know, some payment for that, according to the dairy sector. You know, other sectors in the industry, Grain Farmers of Ontario, for example, today said they were very, very disappointed that there wasn't funds in a trade compensation package for the grains and oilseed sector based on the current market issues and more and the fact that the American grains and oilseed farmers are getting a package of it's into the range of $36 billion to American grains and oilseed farmers. And even if you do the 10% calculation we usually do from the American market to the Canadian market, that would be $3.6 billion for grains and oilseed farmers here. So I think there's others in the industry have reacted with some consternation, because of that.
The question for me, though, is does it go far enough, or is this just a stopgap? I know that some people have observed this, have said that the dairy sector deserves some more clarity, and that right now they're kind of going through the death of a thousand cuts, and they get these sort of band-aids to put on the problem, but they don't really know where they're headed. What's your thoughts on that?
So we don't know what's going to happen with the other $1.4 billion. The government really hasn't said what's going to happen with that. Oh, and it's going to flow out over 7 or 8 more years. So there's not much clarity there, I think. They don't know if it'll be direct subsidies or processing investment or technology investments. So there's a bit of lack of clarity there. But as far as the future for dairy farmers, I think they have more clarity, whether they like where they're at as far as that the reality. We now have trade agreements as long as the European one continues to move and the U.S. And Mexico trade agreement actually gets passed, because we're certainly not there yet. But for the first time in generations, that we have trade agreements with all of the major dairy exporting regions in the world. So we now have the rules set. So Canadian dairy farmers do actually have some clarity now as far as of what they can do. They may not like what they've been limited in what they can do, especially on exports, which some of these trade deals limit, and especially on market access as well. But I think there is some understanding now that about what the dairy market in Canada is going to look like going forward.
Well, thanks, John. Very good of you to fill us in on this.
No problem. Thanks, Gord.
That was Farmtario editor John Gregg on the topic of the recently announced compensation for Canadian dairy producers who've lost market share under recent trade agreements. This is Between the Rows, and I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. Later, we'll be talking to Markets Farm's Phil Franz-Workington about the latest action in the commodities. But first, here's technology writer Spencer Myers. He recently filed an article on the first farmers who've taken autonomous equipment out into the field. Spencer, thanks for joining us today.
Nice to be on this side of the mic for once.
Yeah, thanks for making the long commute.
No problem.
For those of us who don't, for those of us who aren't sitting in the studio here, Spencer actually is the producer, I guess you would say, of our podcast. So he's made the long commute from the control room over to here to participate. So we've been hearing and reading about DOT for a few years now, but some pretty significant steps seem to be made this year. What have they been up to?
Well, we've all been, anyone who's been following machinery or large-scale ag has heard of this idea of autonomous farm equipment, self-driving equipment, essentially robots growing our crops. That's not a new idea. So what is new is that DOT has developed a product, and we've all been seeing it for a couple of years, but this product, the DOT unit, is actually being used in this year's crop. So crops are growing with it. It's in the fields, Canadian fields. So the big news is that it's no longer just this prototype or an idea. It's actually happening.
So did you spoke to a producer then, did you?
I was at the Ag in Motion Farm Show about, I guess, a month ago now, and along with Scott Garvey from Grain News, we caught up with a guy named Dustin Burns. He farms near Kandahar, Saskatchewan, and he's one of the few, I think there's five or six, he's one of the first farmers in Canada to actually buy a DOT unit from DOT Technologies, which is a completely self-driving, fully autonomous farm equipment unit.
So he's bought it, he's not just testing it with Seedmaster.
No, and so that's what's interesting is that Seedmaster has done a very limited commercial release. So what they've done is that they've sort of handpicked some well-known, some kind of close producers that Seedmaster, the parent company, was already working with. And with this focus group, they've kind of eased the farmers into the idea of buying these machines. And Dustin is one of the farmers that actually, you know, has said, I want to try this. I don't want to just see it in demos. I want to buy one and see what it's like. So he has purchased a unit from DOT and is working with the company as I guess you could say, a partner to help with some of their research and development as the product goes forward.
Now, there are risks that come with being an early adopter, though. You never know how things are going to work out. What made him want to buy one of these machines at such an early stage?
During our interview, he actually stressed how he comes from an engineering background. And so when the idea of seeing robots or large-scale autonomous vehicles came up, it kind of already piqued his interest. And he is in the Saskatchewan area, which is near the Seedmaster, actually the factory and the head plant. And one of the things that made him want to buy this is his engineering background, just strictly seeing, you know, this is really interesting, but I still don't know if this is for me. And rather than converting his whole farm to relying on the DOT, he simply bought a DOT unit and is using it as part of his fleet. So he didn't completely switch to only producing with this unit, but it's a large part of his fleet now as the 2019 and 2020 crops start to grow.
So is the machine 100% ready to go then in terms of development?
So that's a bit of a yes and a no answer. The machine itself is done. What Seedmaster has done is that they've used kind of their existing engineering and their background with large-scale implements to start creating smaller implements for this DOT unit that they've made. So the product itself is done, but like other products, even though your iPhone is finished, they're always going to be trying to upgrade and develop it. What they're still working on is the regulations surrounding this machine and the implements, the basically just the regulations and the laws. You know, like, how does autonomous farm machinery work? What are the laws surrounding it? How do the operators operate it? Is there anyone operating it? These are all questions that basically the Manitoba and the federal governments are looking into to answer some of these questions that are bound to create some problems down the line. What those problems are, we don't know, but Seedmaster and the farmers are kind of trying to prepare for what these regulations are going to be.
Well, thanks, Spencer. Anything else to add?
Yeah, I would just suggest watching our full interview. Scott Garvey from Grain News Magazine, along with myself, interviewed Dustin Burns at the Ag in Motion Farm Show, and that's about a 7 or 8 minute full-length interview, so you can hear directly from Dustin about how he's been using it on his operation and kind of, you know, some of the benefits and the headaches that he's found just from producing with it this year. And then, yeah, you could read the full piece as well in the Manitoba Cooperator.
And the video is on the Grain News website?
It'll be on agcanada.com. If you just search Ag Dealer TV dot unit, you'll be able to find it.
That's great. Thank you so much, Spencer.
Thank you.
That was equipment and technology writer Spencer Myers telling us about how autonomous farm equipment is now science fact, not science fiction. You're listening to Between the Rows, and I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. Before we wrap up, we're joined now by Markets Farm's Phil Frounds-Workington. He says the markets maintain their general sense of uncertainty. Phil, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Gord. Thanks for having me.
So tell us what you mean by uncertainty.
Yeah, it's just kind of that time of year where, you know, the harvest is just in its early stages here in Canada and still a ways away as far as beans and corn go in the States. And so it's part waiting on what yields will be and what production will be. That's adding some uncertainty. And then on top of it, we've got the kind of general economic turmoil and who knows what's going on with, you know, economic relations with China and the U.S. and all of that kind of global political stuff in the background. And so, yeah, but it seems more uncertainty than normal. And the crops are later than normal in some cases. So that's kind of, you know, adding an extra level to the, you know, back and forth and uncertain markets, which overall is leading to kind of a steady but choppy tone, I'd say.
So how long will it be before we have any answers about this year's harvest?
Well, the as far as Canada goes, we're going to have next week, August 28th, Statistics Canada has production estimates. Given, you know, their track record and the general thoughts on their track record and timing of surveys and whatnot, they all have an official number. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, every analyst will say, yeah, but, And we'll kind of go from there, and sort of that'll be the baseline for production estimates, and people will second guess. And because we don't really, you know, when the survey was taken, there's still some time before harvest and what will actually be grown. In the States, you know, same thing there. There's the crops were late. So what the production, the USDA had some production estimates last week, which sort of came as a shock to everyone, predicting a pretty big corn crop, which caused corn prices to drop. Whether or not the corn crop will be that big, again, remains to be seen. There's this week, there's some private tour going on, looking into yields in the Midwest, and the estimates are kind of over all, you know, back and forth, but generally pointing to smaller yields than last year. Again, the smaller yields are one field will have a smaller yields, other place will have bigger yields. So how it ends up is kind of, you know, who you believe depends on, you know, makes the markets chop around, and until there's actual firm numbers, we'll expect to see choppiness continue.
And earlier you mentioned that it seemed a little bit more pronounced this year, and I suspect, at least in part, that's just sort of the general international economic situation and trade uncertainty and all of that playing out in the background. Is there anything happening on that front? Do we know anything? Has there been any developments?
There's no and yes. There's every day is a new development, and oh, there's going to be a talk with China, and oh, interest rates are too high or too low, or it's not that there's not a lack of news. It's, you know, maybe you'd almost say there's too much. There's just a constant swirl of different reports and often conflicting, and it kind of from day to day, what sort of bubbles to the top of what traders are following that day. It can be hard to predict, but so yeah, yes and no. Nothing concrete has actually been happening, but plenty of you know, non-concrete chatter is going on to keep things bouncing around, depending on what chatter you listen to.
So for the grain and agriculture commodity markets to really sort of find any direction, we're really relying on getting some real numbers later on in the year.
Yes, that would be, like from a fundamental standpoint, things are up in the air right now. A crop will be grown. It will be harvested. There will be actual supply and demand numbers at some point, and that will provide a baseline for the markets to trade off of. And the, you know, global economic, you know, whatever else is going on in the background, that'll still be going on. But, you know, at least there will eventually be a base to trade off of.
Thanks, Phil. That was Phil Franz-Workington of Markets Farm, keeping us up to date on economic and market developments. That's another edition of Between the Rows. We hope you'll join us again next time. Meanwhile, I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore, wishing you a safe harvest season.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.